Well, folks, what's a crack? It's Gareth McLennan here, your host. Welcome back to the podcast. It is almost 2 weeks now until advancing pre-construction, and I am just finalizing some details. Really looking forward to seeing everyone. I have got loads of special guests lined up for Wednesday and Thursday. So if you're not there, if you want to come and listen to the podcast live, by all means, come and join it. If not, don't worry, they're going to be coming out in the weeks preceding the podcast. Really looking forward to it. Now, over to today's guest, folks. I have Stacey Ramos. She is pre-construction and business development manager at KCI Construction. Really interesting lady. This podcast, I usually try and keep them about half an hour now, but this went on, and we only got to maybe cover three, maybe possibly four topics. Stacey's actually going to advancing pre-construction, so I want to catch up with her again because she is super interesting and has got loads of great ideas around the basics of pre-construction estimating and business development. But just on this podcast, we talked about her 13 years as an MEP designer before she stepped into estimating in 2014, and how that foundation, that MEP foundation, has catapulted her and it helped her advance her career in pre-construction. One of the big things that she talks about is the ability to read plans. She says that is severely lacking in the next generation. We then talk about workforce development. It's something that's close to her heart. She goes into great detail on how to do it. She then talks about kind of pushing herself and throwing herself into opportunities and taking risks. Again, it's a common theme that I see with high-performing people within this industry is being open-minded and throwing yourself at opportunities. And it's testament to Stacey that she's done that and she is reaping the rewards. She then talks about the battle between the title of pre-construction manager, senior estimator. She believes there's a big disconnect there with the schools and getting people out of the schools and getting them into pre-construction, which I sort of agree with. She talks about the business development side of pre-construction, which she's heavily involved with at KCI. And then her big pain point is time management. It's something that's come up a lot over the last 4 or 5 months with me speaking with estimators and hiring managers. Time management, it's about utilizing time well, but also being able to say no and being able to block off time. Anyway, Stacey goes into it in great detail. I'm going to hand you over to her. Thanks for listening. See you at Advancing Pre-Construction, and please like and share. Oh, before that, our two sponsors, Concentric and Beck Technology.
Stuck in spreadsheets? Tired of the endless loop of copying and pasting? Now imagine all your estimating workflows in one program. Beck Technology's innovative Destiny Estimator software streamlines the entire estimating process. With intuitive tools and powerful analytics, you can create accurate and reliable estimates quickly and easily. We understand the challenges pre-con teams face because we were born from construction. When you are ready to streamline your estimating effort, visit us at beck-technology.com and talk with a tech expert in a Destiny Estimator demo today.
Stacey Ramos, welcome to the Pre-Construction Podcast.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming on. Stacey, I wanted to bring you on because I like your background. I like the fact that you've gone from a MEP designer all the way up to now doing pre-construction and business development for KCI. Give us an idea of that journey. Obviously, coming out of college, coming out of school, was it always construction for you, or what was the path?
Well, actually, for me, I was very untraditional, which defines pretty much my entire career. My family background is construction. So technically, yes, I have a background in construction, and that is where my passion started. After I left active duty Army, I actually went into the engineering side, the engineering design side, through an opportunity that came, and went through that entire process, went to an associate degree program to be a better designer drafter, and then decided 12 years in to pivot and move into construction management, which is really where I found my love and my passion. I received a CM bachelor's in construction management. Love it, love it, love it. Started my first job at Brinkman Constructors, and I've never really looked back. I've enjoyed it ever since.
And what was the push to come to the good side, let me call it? Why the GC side? Was it something that you had always kind of thought about, or was it, did it come about with an opportunity, a conversation, relationship?
Well, believe it or not, it actually came from my employer at the time. And I was coming up on a window of opportunity where I had been designing long enough that even though I didn't have a degree, an engineering degree, I could take a state exam and still receive my license because I had worked so long in the industry. And I remember they asked, so, hey, you're there. Would you like to start studying? We'll, you know, help you get that license. We'll pay for things. And I left and thought, I'm not sure I want to do this the rest of my life. I'm not 100% convinced I want to invest that time and energy. And through just a little bit of conversation with my husband, we decided there's a CM program right down the street. You should try that. It's a little bit closer to home and what I grew up doing and watching my dad do. And literally the rest has been history. I joined the program, walked in and registered and took classes as, you know, an adult working full-time in engineering and sat in classes with a bunch of 18, 19, 20 year olds talking about their problems, but it was really a great time and I enjoyed it. So really honestly, and to this day, that employer often comments how they push me into it unknowingly.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And you have to have the skills. I mean, you have to have that mindset. I hear it all the time on the pre-construction podcast. It's that open mindset to be able to accept challenges when they come along and also just go for it. But again, your background, your family history within construction, it probably made it a little bit easier because you knew what you were going to get into.
Absolutely. I've always been a risk taker, which is what I feel like when I talk with people about my career. If you're a gambler, if you have that kind of, you like the thrill seeking and that kind of, you know, you do well in this side of the industry, in the pre-construction, the estimating side of the world. And never had an issue with taking risk.
And that's what it's all. I mean, we're going to get into it even more detail, but a lot of it is about risk and about mitigating risk and when to take risk and when to not take risk. So,
Absolutely.
And I'm still kind of fascinated by the ME pre prototype designer. How did that set you up for your role right now? Was it a good foundation to go to kind of catapult you into the GC world?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like it's probably one of my strongest aspects of my personal career and the skill sets that I have. I spent a long, you know, 12 years designing. And in that, all it did was grow my ability to not only visualize spaces, see end user needs, but also it really honed my blueprint and plan reading skill set, which I think is probably one of the things that I noticed the most as a struggle on the pre-con estimating side is an understanding of really how to read and review blueprints, what the entire concept of a plan set is to include all of the documents. And my time as an engineering designer, I just feel like strengthened that ability for me.
Yeah, brilliant. And obviously the MEP say we're going to get into it later on, but the skill sets and the succession plan and the workforce development, the MEP and fire protection side, it seems to be the biggest, I don't want to say the biggest industry, but the biggest threat when you see a lot of the real experts within that space are going to be retired in the next decade. So the more people that we can get in with those skill sets, the better.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's really also one of the biggest risks when you're, you know, when even to this day, conversationally, when you're looking at a project and identifying where are my potential pitfalls going to be or my overruns and expense, it starts usually in MEP. It really does. It's a very difficult, that particular scope of work, it just can be so varied from what is required based on where you're located at to what the user group is to what the requirements from that authority having jurisdiction is. And so it just is a all around unique aspect to the construction industry that while I love and am passionate about, yes, it's definitely anyone who has a mind for it needs to run at it. It's great. It's a
yeah. Absolutely. And then you hear some crazy kind of figures about projects right now. And obviously it depends about the industry and the type of project. But the MEP side and fire protection it can be anything up to 40, 45% of a project. Are you seeing that in your end?
Absolutely. I mean, again, that was actually what really brought me my first pre-construction opportunity for my career. You know, Brinkman Constructors, immediately when I was interviewing with them, I actually had applied as a project engineer because that's really what we were trying to do leaving the CM program is that's the pathway, right? You're going to graduate, you're going to be a PE, then you're going to be an assistant PM, then you're going to be a PM, you know, and it all this is laid out. And then here on the scene comes an interview with Brinkman and they stopped and like, we really need you to be a pre-construction engineer for us. And I was like, I don't really know what that means. No one's ever talked about that before. Let's discuss, right? And through that conversation, flushed that really they were looking for and saw that benefit. The key benefit to my work history was that I could kind of bring a lens to that. I know I can look at, you know, MEP drawings and I can go, holy cow, that's in there. It's pricey. We need to really accommodate and we're going to need to add extra money. Or, you know, Brinkman actually was a great experience because they pre-estimate everything. Even a hard bid is fully pre-estimated. And so that is why they had approached me. And what that relationship did was just helping build that out, looking at how do we look at the systems that are in the plan and best accommodate and cover the most risk? Because MEPs really are a large portion of every contract scope. It just, they're an intensive item. They're costly.
Yeah, absolutely. And getting even more costly, let me tell you, with price
Yes, they
escalation.
are.
And that, I mean, that obviously is your value. You went then to Brinkman, you did various other roles. Was that you then, that decision, that conversation with Brinkman, was that you literally like, there's no other place for me rather than pre-con and estimating? Or did you have, especially when you were doing the construction management degree, you touched on it earlier, they seem to be the lectures, they seem to be pushing people between to towards a traditional project engineer, superintendent, PM. How much of the construction management degree was made up of estimating? And had you got the foresight to say, you know what, this is where the single biggest decisions are made, this is the place for me?
Oh man, I absolutely did not have any idea I would stay in pre-construction. I took the position as pre-construction engineer, still the first, I mean, easily the entire time I was there at Brinkman. I really didn't know what it meant in a sense of it just really was coming on. That concept of pre-construction estimating was just becoming even really a conversation in a room, right? I remember one of the first times that I realized that this is not as accepted as I feel like it should be or would be because someone didn't want to use the word estimator in front of an owner. And that's really the first time I thought, I wonder what's really going on and looking into and kind of trying to figure it out. I love it. I loved it. When I went into it, I actually went into it going, I don't want this to be my career, but I will commit to do it 2 years for you. Like I will give you 2 years of all of this. I will work on help build out this historical data. I'll find ways to help break down so that the pre-construction engineers can be a little more accurate and hopefully cover a little bit more risk based on these items, that kind of thing, right? That was actually how that conversation went, was I'll do this for about 2 years and then I'll move back over and continue down the path, right? I had no idea I would actually love it, that it would be something I was so good at and that I would continue doing it the rest of my career. Absolutely didn't know that.
Yeah, and it comes back to what we discussed at the start as well about throwing yourself at opportunities and basically the unknown, because I think this is I'm kind of having a go at the education system here, but this is where I have a problem. I mean, a construction management degree is so heavily operations that, don't get me wrong, I agree with you. In 2014, 2015, pre-construction estimating was just evolving. We didn't really understand the value of it. But now in 2024, we now know that the single most important decisions are made within pre-construction. I would love to see that replicated in the classroom, in the construction management degrees all over the US. Do you think that would be kind of fitting with our industry right now?
Well, I think that it definitely has weight. The idea is important. So I do sit on, interestingly enough, I joined the advisory board for that program that I graduated from. And I do get that a lot. You know, I interview every semester of the exiting seniors, and a lot of them are growing more interested in and hearing more about pre-construction. And you're absolutely right. We still do not provide enough classes. I had one estimating class when I graduated, and that was a very limited, you know, I walked into my first day at Brinkman thinking, well, I hope nobody thinks that I know what I'm doing, but we're going for it, you know. But now we're really at least trying to offer a few more. But absolutely, to your point, we need to, I really do get on this soapbox. We really need to get stronger in our plan reading courses, have more of them. We need to do more in the estimating side and help break down really what that looks like. Because regardless of whether you work at a company that's embraced pre-construction or you work at a company that still eat what you kill, either way, you need to know how to put money to what you're about to build. And it just is, it isn't a natural skill. You have to learn it and you have to do it.
Yeah, you have to earn your stripes. And I tell you what, they're hard earned, let me tell you. It's not for everyone. But that's good. I'm glad that. So I can tell all my listeners now that come 2-3 years time that'll be the degree to go whenever you're looking at pre-con and estimating, Missouri State University.
Absolutely. Yes. We're working to add classes and hear that interest and the need, which sometimes it just takes a little longer to steer a ship, right? It's just so new, but it is becoming. I will say the other thing that affects that from looking at it now is that the opportunities that you're seeing at graduation, the offerings, right? If there are more companies hiring that title and that role, it's immediately going to affect what programs feel like they need to offer to make sure their students are ready and prepared for. So a little bit of it's coming from, I will still say, as an industry, we have yet to really focus on and call it and all agree on a title. And so you get a lot of different companies just calling it whatever they want. I mean, a pre-construction engineer, an estimator, a pre-construction, fill in the blank. We put a lot of things on there. And so until we kind of accept what that looks like and start moving forward with it, it really will be kind of a muddied message for a little bit down to your higher education level.
Yeah. Okay. No, I agree with that. I think we're getting close to it. We're moving away from the estimator, the pre-construction engineer, the pre-construction manager, pre-construction services manager. Yeah. And the beautiful next question is the business development side of things, because you're currently pre-construction and business development manager. And then as well, just prior to that, you were pre-construction services manager. For anybody who doesn't know what, and again, this is another title that people don't really understand, pre-construction services manager. Give us an insight into what your responsibilities were within that role.
Well, I think that really was defined by simply the breadth of the services, you know, managing all of the different services and embracing and kind of defining what we as a company would provide to owners, which this is a conversation that companies, I don't think have really, again, it's so new, they really haven't figured out exactly how to offer pre-construction services to owners and not lose a lot of money, to be honest.
Free,
I mean, because,
they,
you know, what I mean, like you're technically, we could offer a lot of budgeting services to a lot of people and then never actually go forward with the project. And then what do you have at the end of your year? A lot of overhead expense. So,
and that to me is, I mean, they call it free con all the time. I mean, I talk to GCs all the time. They're only now getting the pre-construction services, the service they get, they're only getting paid for around 45-50%. Maybe the good guys who are very much pre-construction services focused get paid for 60-70% of the work that they actually do. But I think as a standard, you talked about the standardization of the titles. I think the standardization of pre-construction services is something that can really help everyone.
Absolutely. Agreed. Absolutely. I have this conversation. I've been having it now since my time at Killian of, holy cow, we invested so much time with that person. And then, come to find out they didn't even have the land secured. They can't move forward. The funding wasn't actually as close to being done as we thought. And now here we are. Well, how do we fix that? How do we address that? How do we, again, mitigate our risk so that we can still offer these services? They're viable and they are much needed. They've become even more important after COVID. to offer them, I feel like personally. So yes, we need to identify and to, again, it's a message, right, to owners and designers when they sell those to the owners of, hey, you can go over here and there's pre-construction services at this company. They'll help get you across this line. What does that look like? Tell us, you know what I mean? That's just still a very new conversation that can look very different in a lot of places. But yes, it's interesting. The services, I have a lot of conversations with people. What do you do? Okay, well, I help you do initial scheduling. I'll help you work through your initial budgets, what you're going to need to at least go into to be able to get some money started or conversation on your financing. We're happy to help work out site layout. I have, you know, some, it's not going to be, I'm not your engineer, but I absolutely will help you say, yo, that's not going to work. Maybe you should look at this or that kind of conversation. We do a lot of happily pair you, help find you an architect, help put you in contact with a design team that's going to be a good fit for you. But the services can get, I mean, that is a very open-ended experience. Yeah. It can go a long time into a lot of different directions. And I just kind of manage that for KCI.
Yeah, and it's broad as well. Listen, there's so many services. I mean, some companies now have a complete division that just looks after pre-construction services. And that leads me on to my next question. The pre-construction service, you are also responsible for business development. Tell me how that role, I mean, I'm a big advocate for pre-construction itself being your biggest business development tool. How does it work at KCA?
That is exactly the conversation we had. So when I started at KCI, they were just transitioning out of the Eat What You Kill. They were just moving into having estimators dedicated to that task, right? Which is really a key internal conversation companies need to have is, what does that look like? How do you want your staff time to be split and to what tasks do you want to give them? So KCI had just started that endeavor when I was approached and we had the conversation about, you know, pre-construction and what I would offer outside of different things that maybe all the other estimators are doing. So as we started to build out, it was a natural conversation to go into business development, which they did not have. In my side of the world, if you don't go find work, you aren't going to have work. I have to go make the relationships. You, as the person who offers the pre-construction services, right? I have to go make the relationships. I have to be the face. I have to sit in the interviews. I have to talk with the designers that are in with conversation early enough to help sway owners into true pre-construction rather than a hard bid scenario. So to me, it's just a natural has to occur together. The person that's selling the service needs to be out there, needs to be part of, needs to be engaged with. And it's, in my opinion, very critical. I enjoy it a whole lot.
Yeah, and listen, everybody enjoy, and it's a conversation I have all the time. I think that webinar that you were listening to when we were on talking about the difference between a traditional estimator and the pre-construction manager now, the skills needed for both are completely different. And I think that as well, I mean, I think on that webinar, there was a stat, 87% of projects right now are in some sort of collaboration delivery model. So have you seen that at KCA since you've started working on business development on the pre-construction services side, that you've not moved away from it, but a bigger percentage of your projects are now collaboration, design build, design bid build, rather than the traditional hard bid?
I believe wholeheartedly hard bid is going away. I think after COVID, we saw that how easily things can get disrupted with a little bit of disruption. Suddenly we have a lot of risk, right? That's what really summarizes that experience. We can have a little bit of disruption in the process, and there are lots of key critical points within a construction process that then can ultimately cost people money, cost people time, cost people, you know, their business models, their plans. It just became an eye-opener for us as an industry that if we work together longer, and from the beginning, hopefully, that we can make a project more viable, ensure that it actually is completed and, you know, checks all of the boxes, right? There's a box for everybody. Whatever stakeholder you have involved in that process, they have something they need to have happen to ensure that they still make money, that it's still a good project, that they end up walking away feeling good about what they've invested in. And so, yes, even a I hate to say it, but even some hard bit is going into where it's more collaborative. They
Yeah.
want you to put more, it's actually really interesting. I've been watching it the last, year or so. A lot of hard bids are wanting the bidder to develop an initial schedule and put it on the bid form, which is new. That is new to ask us to try and help work out for the owner what timeline we see their project going at. And so I think that's just going to become the norm as everyone is going to want more input from all parties from the very get-go. And we're going to see that everything will need to be more negotiated, more collaborative, more group mindset than this independent design it, put it out, build it, move on.
Yeah. And I mean, Stacey, that automatically gives the GC for me more control. I mean, ask them to build out the schedule from the very beginning on a hard bid that they're not getting paid for. I mean, the risk there again kind of is increased a little bit. In the future, do you see it, and this is just me kind of putting it out there, do you see it that the GC is the main person and then they select the architect, the designer, the subcontractors? Do you see that them holding the, I don't want to say the contract, but holding the majority of the risk? I mean, that's the way it seems to be going.
I think it's what people want. I think from the owner side, it's what the owners are wanting. I do feel like that's what a lot of owners are now wanting. They want the GC to take the majority risk. And they feel like that probably gives everybody a little bit more rest, right? Or comfort in the situation. It's not my favorite, to be honest. I've done a lot of different styles of contract methods, and whether it's design build negotiated or what I'm going to call a design assist, right, which is kind of my favorite. I've had this conversation with some architects and some circles. Design assist to me, where an owner hires a GC and an architect and we together go on the endeavor, I think that usually in my experience turns out to be the most enjoyable project for everyone, right?
Interesting.
It's very it kind of actually I feel like it helps the general contractor and the architect become co-owners in the process, and thus I think it's a little less confliction-y, or maybe sometimes when the GC holds that prime contract and then they employ the designers, they're almost as this fight for power, right? Because GCs were we know we have the risk and we know we're going to build it, and so we want to kind of really push the direction of what things are doing. But architects have they know the standards. They know what is going to go into the design. They know inherent, jurisdictional code. We just so it becomes this almost a little to me a little bit more. I'm not going to use the word hostile, but it's just when a GC is the prime contract, I think things are a little bit harder. It makes the process a slight bit harder than if a GC and an architect go in together and together work responding to an owner and going up the tree to an owner together. Just that's my preferred in my experience. I just think it's the best and most enjoyable way to do a project.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of that. Design assist, design build seem to be the two most popular for me. That's what I'm hearing when you speak to people on the podcast or even hire managers. That's what they prefer doing, and that's the skill set that they hire to do those deliver those models. The skill set that you need to hire for a hard bid is completely different to a design build or a design assist. Because I know that you're very passionate about workforce development. So I think that's the next topic we should get into. Talk to me about workforce development and tell me why it's so close to your heart.
Well, I spend a lot of time. I mean, I grew up in the industry, right, from childhood, watching my father do it as a small business into doing it for some rather large companies. And now that I'm quite along in my career, and we're seeing, especially again, as the larger majority share of our workforce is retiring and leaving the industry, it's become a huge gap. And it's kind of this conversation everywhere you go, and it's something that we're all struggling with as we're trying to define what do we do now as a backstop to all of the knowledge that's left or we know is leaving. How do we prepare? We've started a lot of the 5-year planning. Succession planning is a real big key critical thing we're seeing come on the scene for every position because we know that someone has to train the next person kind of thing. I do it because I love it. I enjoy talking to young people and explaining how important our industry is. And I think that's what made me passionate about workforces. You know, construction is a time old tradition. It's key. It's a key indicator for every society. And I just think we don't message that well. And so that really became how I got involved in and how I was asked to participate in our workforce development here in this area. But from there, it just has grown into a passion for wanting to excite young people about construction. And we were talking earlier, I do think it also needs a little, you know, we need to excite our industry about investing in and accepting where we are, embracing it, and developing what it will become, which is, you know, again, in our industry, I think it's really great. We maybe take a little bit longer to get to the same place as other industries, or maybe, you know, accepting things. But once we do, we accelerate really quickly at it. And you see that time and time again, whether it's through our technology, whether it's through things like roles and responsibilities, i.e. pre-construction becoming on the scene to try and help with our increased workloading. And then now workforce development, I think once we accept it and we embrace it, it's going to take off.
Yeah. And I think we've seen massive strides in that over the last 3 or 4 years, kind of even before COVID, there were signs of it. I think COVID kind of expedited it a little bit, whether it be the technology side, the work-life balance, the culture that we're creating. I would love to know, get your opinion on this. And this is just from my side on the staffing side. I think one of the key things we've got to get right is the retention as well, because we can focus so many time, so much on workforce development and getting people into industry. We forget about the good people that we have here, because
absolutely.
5 years ago, my conversation with the estimators would have been very much, oh, I'm thinking about leaving the industry. It's too much. I'm getting basically overworked. I'm in the office to 10 o'clock at night. There's no flexibility. There's no work-life balance. I think that has gotten much better. The technology side's got much better. What I want to say is, I think there's a good story in there rather than all kind of doom and gloom. But looking at your background, so the BD, pre-construction service management, workforce development, time management is a massive thing for the VPs and the directors of pre-construction that I speak to. How do you divide up your time, and how do you allocate enough time to look at workforce development, look at technology, look at business development, look at pre-construction services? What's the secret sauce, Stacey?
Oh my goodness, you're going to laugh at me. Everyone's going to laugh when they hear me say it. It's color coding in Microsoft Outlook. I don't know how else to it. Unfortunately, that is my sage wisdom, my advice here in this. I actually have this conversation a lot with new estimators, actually even with seasoned estimators, believe it or not, because it is a struggle, right? We have a lot of fires when you are in that, not that everyone doesn't, but when you're deemed estimator to help win the work for a company, to, you know, if we don't win it, there's nothing for anyone else to do. And so that can become a real pressure point, and it can cause people, I've watched, kind of constantly run. It's okay. You got to stop. You have to prioritize. You have to block your time, and you have to stick to that blocking no matter what, right? Everything is a fire in our industry. You are never going to fix them all in the immediate moment they need done. But if you don't prioritize your time, you'll never actually finish any of them.
Yeah, true.
And so that really is, I actually still do it to this day on my, you know, personal development reviews with my employees, that I go in, pick colors, call them what they need to be, whether this is business development time only today at this time and this time, or I'm always going to do it this day, work on this task, right? You go in, and then when you look at your calendar every single morning, you instantly already know what every color means, and you already know what your day is going to look like, which then really honestly allows for new things to pop up, because you're already comfortable in your rhythm and you already know, okay, yes, I can add that to my schedule, even though I really, you know, have all these other things, because you already know just by building that habit and seeing that daily routine that you can accept it here or here, or I can put you at this time slot and I'll be able to fix it. We'll work on it. We'll resolve it. I think the other thing it does is using a system that way helps you not always feel so pressured to solve it in that, you know what I mean? It kind of relieves a little bit and helps you step back and go, okay, I'm going to work on it for this long, and then I'm going to step away, and that's going to be whether I need to go find another answer, we need to do another item with it, you know, another task, and then come back and resolve it. And then at that point, it becomes a color on the calendar of a task that has to be identified and completed. And so, yeah, people look at my Outlook calendar and
I would love to ask you to share your screen, but we won't do that.
It's intense. It's a lot of colors.
Is it like the rainbow, or do you have like four or five primary colors?
I have about four or five, and believe it or not, I have used them religiously, the exact same color coding since probably Brinkman, to be honest. And yeah, I live and breathe them. I know exactly what they mean. And when I see them, I know exactly what I need to do, or hard stop on and move on to the next and that kind of thing. And yeah. Yeah.
And I think there's a couple of things in that. There's the idea that when somebody brings a problem to you, you can't say no. I think saying no, this is when I'm gonna put you in. This is where you fit within the rainbow of my calendar, and
yeah.
That's it. I'm not getting distracted now from this task that I'm doing right now. Quick question for you. Were you always organized, or was this something you picked up? Was it a mentor that kind of guided you into the color?
Believe it or not, it was military service.
Brilliant.
So I graduated high school, and you know, at that time it just wasn't even a conversation to join my dad's company. It wasn't even spoken of to just go into business, you know, for my family kind of thing. And so I thought, well, okay, what do I do? And join the military. And they taught me everything I know about time management, personal management, and the detail orientation, which is absolutely critical on if you're going to go into this career path. You know, being detail oriented is so key. And those things were just, I did not have them. They were not inherent to me, I promise. The Army spent a lot of time putting that and ingraining that in me. And I look back, and that really was the beginning of my career for me, was them teaching me to do those things.
Brilliant. Yeah, it sounds to me that it should be a module at the Missouri State University, the color,
yeah,
the Stacey color coordination. But that's it. I mean, that's what it takes. It takes these small nuggets of information, because I imagine there's estimators or pre-construction managers listening to this going, I am all over the place every week, and I get to the end of the week and I look back through my week and I go, what did I actually achieve? What did I get done? Or was I just half putting out fires and actually didn't do anything? And it's a problem that every industry faces as well, but because of pre-construction and the evolution of the role, there's so much to do. You almost have to
Absolutely.
To learn to say no and prioritize certain tasks.
Well, and the worst thing that can happen, which I have watched from a distance, is you are so focused on all those other fires that the primary task of winning work starts to slip. You're spending all your time addressing things that really in all of at that moment are going to have to solve themselves, or are going to have to, you know, you're going to have to lean into other people and trust that they solve it kind of thing, because you have to focus on a bid date. You have to focus on getting that pricing together. You have to focus on tasks that are critical to being successful in our career. And yeah, I've watched some people spiral on that. And then suddenly it's constantly withdrawing from bids, constantly saying, hey, we're not able to bid on this. We're going to have to not, you know, and that's your worst case. If you don't find a balance and you don't find a way to kind of prioritize your time and identify where those slots, even if you call them fire slots, even if 4 hours every other day I give to fires, and that's how you want to address it, you need to isolate them down and control the amount of time you invest in dealing with them.
Yeah. And again, that comes from leadership. I mean, if you've got a really good tight go, no go strategy, then that will save your team loads of time in the future as well. Listen, we could talk about this all day. I want to talk on one topic. I know we were only going to do two, but there's loads of things here. Where does pre-construction technology come in there? Because I believe that technology is not going to replace anybody, but it's going to basically give us more bandwidth to do what we're good at. Oh, sorry, what pre-construction managers are good at, the high level stuff. Talk to me about AI, automation, pre-con tech. Where's your thoughts on it, and what do you use, and what do you see as being a big game changer in the future?
Well, I mean, I am unfortunately a late starter to technology acceptance. For the webinar, you guys had the conversation of, unfortunately, I started and entered the industry in the Microsoft Excel world, which I could still comfortably live in if I had to. It doesn't always bother me. But I have found that, again, right, so much is happening, and we're, as projects are becoming, even the bid documents are becoming so that just so much information, the package sizes get bigger and bigger, the quantity of sheets, the number of spec sheets, you know, it's, we are going to have to lean into technology for that. I do find that I love all of the new ways to solicit bids, to get out there, right, to put notifications out and by mass is amazing, to have those systems, love having those. I've used Building Connected. We're on Pipeline Suite now. Those are such a time saver, and they really are, to an estimator and a pre-construction person. Man, that's our favorite system. One, we can go in and we can get that kind of select our subs, get information out, post things. You know, that becomes that collaborative space for that for us. Other things that I'm seeing and that I'm kind of intrigued with and that I'm working with here, especially in KCI, is how do we become, how do we merge pre-construction into the operational side so that there's less data loss? You know, we have these times where we invest months and months and months into our project, especially in a pre-construction side, right? I can work 6-8 months on helping define a project and get it across the line. And then I go and I hand it off and there's suddenly this loss of information and knowledge, even through systems, which is interesting. That's been interesting to watch. I've watched that in the last couple. And so we really are looking at how can we, as the pre-construction side, do that work inside of the same system that operations is using to then build it. That way there's this consistency, and then go back and they can see what we were looking at, what we had planned, putting all of that information together. So I see that as probably the next step we're going to need to invest our energy on the pre-construction side, is we can't house it and isolate it into the systems we like, i.e. estimating takeoff software. Great, I have it. Now, unfortunately, when I hand it over and people have questions, it's stuck somewhere they can't access, or it's in a system they don't have a license for. And so it's just become a cumbersome transition I've noticed, and probably will be, in my mind, the next thing we need to tackle is, How do we use systems to ensure that project life from beginning to end is all in the same place, in the same space? And yeah, that'll be what I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, and listen, I'm not, Stacey, 85-90% of companies are the same position. It's a flow of data. It's a flow of data downstream, but then the historical data, getting it back from when the projects are completed, what was missed, what was changed, and change orders, So that is the key. It's difficult. And this is the beauty of it as well. I think a lot of people don't understand that every construction industry or construction company is different. Nobody does it the same way. Nobody runs through pre-con estimating or even operations the same way. So it's about what works for you. This idea that you move from one company to the next and they're going to do it the same way, it just doesn't happen.
Does not happen absolutely at all, which is great, right? That's the exciting part of our industry. And, you know, it's exciting to take your learned knowledge and then take it to that next place and help define and build that into the next culture. So it can be exciting and challenging at the same time.
Yeah, and that's where, as an industry, we've got to get more collaborative. And I'm not talking about delivery method. I'm talking about pre-construction and estimating. So peer-to-peer learning, to me, is the next step for us after we get the technology sorted and the people sorted. Stacey, this has been absolutely brilliant. Thank you very much. It feels as if we could talk for another couple of hours, but we probably will get you back on again because there's a couple of topics we didn't get a chance to cover. But thank you. Now, generally, what happens in the after the podcast and after it's published, people reach out to me and say, "Listen, Stacey, love the podcast. I've got a couple of follow up questions. Where's the best place to get you?"
Absolutely. So I'm on LinkedIn. If you look for me there, Stacey Ramos, and again, just even putting in the KCI reference should pull me. I don't know how many Stacey Ramoses are out there, but I'm always available. If you go to KCI Construction's website, I'm on there. You can get contact for me there. I'm available anytime for any conversation.
Brilliant. Love it. And listen, thank you very much. What I'll do, folks, in the show notes below, I will put a link to Stacey's LinkedIn profile so you can connect with her there.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for having me.
No problem. Until next time, thank you.
Have a good day.
Hi, I'm Steve DeLordo, founder and CEO of Concentric, the first holistic platform for pre-construction. As a former executive officer of one of the largest general contractors in the U.S., I have experienced firsthand the challenges the industry is facing, particularly in pre-construction. Pre-construction is still a highly manual and fractured collection of processes. Essential information is kept in ad hoc, scattered spreadsheets and documents, which really limits the understanding and hides the full picture of a project for all those involved. Concentric is here to change that. Our 360-degree platform unites data, workflows, and people. With Concentric, you and your team can access real-time insights and data, assess and mitigate risk to ensure a successful project outcome, and most importantly, unlock the enormous capacity of your talent and your data. To learn more about Concentric and to book a demo, head to our website, concentric.com. That's spelled CONCENTRIC.com. Concentric, it's pre-construction recalibrated for the modern builder.
Well, folks, what a lady Stacey is. I have to say, I could have talked to Stacey for 3 or 4 hours. She's one of those personalities that she's just so full of information, such a diverse background that she's just picked up life experiences, really good processes, really good methods. I love that conversation. As you heard, lovely lady. If you have any questions, any queries, please, I will put her show note, her LinkedIn profile link in the show notes below. Feel free to reach out to her. If you have any questions about the podcast, give me a shout. And please, your support is massive to the success of the Pre-Construction Podcast. I'm going to advance in pre-construction. I'm going to have a ball. I'm going to get loads of good content over to you. So please like and share. Talk to your peers. Talk to your co-workers. And get the word on the podcast out. Until next time.